Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
So here we are in the last weekend of February. February is one of the short months for moms, and it's good and it's bad. It's good if you're just trying to get through the month like I am, waiting on college acceptance letters, and we have until March 31st to get the final ones in our household. And so if you're trying to get through February fast, it's good that it only has 28 days. Or if you're trying to pay bills, on the other hand, the bills due on the first of the month come up a lot faster. So I guess it's all about the way you see the glass half filled or half empty. Whichever it is, I'm glad that you're here with us. You can pull up a glass if you want to and listen to Mom Talk Radio with your favorite beverage. Glass of wine, maybe a cup of coffee, or if you're pregnant, you can grab a bottle of Mother Nurture. You know, Mother Nurture is the new enhanced flavored waters that have everything you need for you and your baby: DHA, folic acid, calcium, all of the good nutrients. And they also have chocolate truffles that are so delicious and indulgent, and they only have 30 calories. That's the part I like best. So pull up whatever glass you want, because we have a great show ahead of us today. We're going to be talking about mentoring. We're going to be talking with one woman who actually has sextuplets. So if you're juggling one or two kids right now, you're going to feel really good after we talk with Maya McGee, who is the mother of sextuplets. Can you even believe? Oh, my gosh. Like, six kids at once. I had two at once, and I thought that was a struggle. So I can't imagine what six must be. Before we talk to our first guest, Heather Monahan, I want to talk to you about Tasty Lee tomatoes. For health, flavor, and freshness, try new Tasty Lee tomatoes. They are vine-ripened with up to 50% more lycopene than other brands. Best of all, they're certified by the American Heart Association as a heart-healthy, check-marked food. I love the fact that they taste just like I grew them myself, with just the right mix of sweet and tangy. Personally, I think the taste is exceptional. I guarantee you'll buy the first package for the health reasons, but you'll buy the second package because they taste so good. For a healthy, happy life, there's nothing better than juicy, garden fresh, Tasty Lee tomatoes. For the big games, keep your snack supply loaded with fresh and healthy snacks made from Tasty Lee tomatoes. How about a BLT? Tasty, your family will love them. For lots of healthy recipes and more fresh ways to go, visit tasty-lee.com. That's tasty with an I, -lee.com. Tasty Lee tomatoes are also available at your favorite grocery store. And if not, ask for them by name, Tasty Lee tomatoes. After our short break, we're going to come back with Heather Monahan. She runs a mentoring group that advises women on workplace issues. We're going to tackle those when we return.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am excited to have with us today Heather Monahan. She runs Heather Monahan, a mentoring group that advises women on various workplace issues. She has a distinct perspective from both the employee and hiring manager, and she's kind of tackles it at a 360 degree viewpoint. I'm excited to have her here and want to jump right in. So welcome, Heather, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just tackle some of the things that no working mother should ever have to apologize for. Number one, taking vacation. What's your thoughts on that one?
Right. So, you know, most people, most employees are under some type of a contract or some type of employee handbook. And I think a good way to look at it is you are obligated to take that vacation time that your employer has provided for you. You know, you're contractually obligated. That's part of the commitment. They're asking you to take that vacation time. That was something part of the deal when you came on board. And a lot of people feel guilty about taking time off and feel as though they need to apologize. So I just am suggesting that we look at it a different way and that really we're obligated to take that when we join that company.
Sometimes I think we feel that guilt when there's absolutely no reason to. If we took out the emotion, it wouldn't look the same. And probably that applies to turning off the out-of-office responder when you're off.
I think that we all know those people that go dark for a little while and they're missing and you're wondering, are they off? Or did they take the day off? Did they take a couple of days off? But you don't know because you're not hearing back. It's so much better from a communication standpoint to make sure you put that out of office on. It alleviates you having to constantly check your email to find out if there's an emergency. And it helps others to know where they can go for a quick answer if you are out for a couple of days.
So let's just talk about promoting ourselves in the workplace, because a lot of women aren't really good. I remember a man once said to me in my career, I wish that you would look at yourself as others looked at you. And a lot of us, we don't put value on what we do, so we don't really promote ourselves to our peers, to our managers, and within the company. Do you have any thoughts and recommendations around that one?
Yeah, even when people do value what they're doing, you know, myself included, I do a lot of work outside of my, you know, my job, you know, helping with charity, winning awards, whatever it is. I remember feeling really badly about the idea of promoting myself because I thought people would look at me as if I was a narcissist. I was full of myself. And I watched the men around me at work specifically do it and feel really good about it. And I was able to commend them and applaud them because I was alerted to what they were doing. And it really brought about positive emotion for them. So I decided to look at that a little bit differently and start promoting myself at work, my accolades and things that I was doing outside of the office so that others could understand who I was. And what it turned out to be was people were inspired by the work I was doing. People were excited to hear about my wins. And it really shifted from me looking at it as being selfish to seeing that I'm allowing others to get to know me better and help support me when I might need it, and as well as I want to be there to support them and share in their wins. So I definitely think it's important to promote yourself at work, on social, and in your personal life.
So let's talk about something that women, particularly working mothers, always feel guilty about, and that is leaving work to get their kids. I want to give you an example. I had 3 children under the age of 20 months. And so we had a lot of school activities. I remember one day when I was a corporate vice president and the only woman in our group, and all the men, we all had kids at the same school and we were all going to the same Christmas pageant, but the men would come out and say, oh man, I'm going to the Christmas pageant because my wife is making me. And me, I went out and said to the secretaries, you know, the assistants outside the door, I'm going to an out-of-office meeting. I didn't want to say that I was going to the pageant because I, you know, but in 10 minutes, we were all sitting in the exact same cafeteria watching the exact same play.
Yeah, that situation is not unique to you. And I think that everyone listening to this can really understand. I had a similar situation at work where I had an employee who worked for me at 4:30 in the afternoon say, hey, I'm taking off to go coach my daughter's Little League game. I'm so excited. Have a great night. And didn't even feel that there was any type of need to get that approved because he was so proud of himself for going to his daughter's game. So, you know, that incident for me really helped me to change perspective in that, you know, other people, when they position it correctly, are looked upon and praised for spending time for their family, you know, with their family, with their children. Why can't I do that same thing? And I've really tried to reposition and approach things differently with that, you know, that same attitude. And it, frankly, it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would be your best advice to moms in general and how they overall look at their workplace?
You know, to put your needs first and really think about, you know, what your goals are, what's important to you, what are your priorities, and to make sure to approach things from that perspective, to communicate very clearly about what you want, what your boundaries are, and to feel confident in yourself. You don't need to be apologizing for how you feel, what your priorities are, or the fact that you are a mother and that's important to you. There's a lot of value in balanced employees and people bringing different perspectives to the table. And women typically have a lot of empathy, a lot of creativity, detail, talents that not everybody else has. So you can feel really proud about who you are, stand in that confidence and represent yourself well every day at work.
Can you, as we close out this segment, we just have another minute left. Can you tell us how women can work with you and how they can find out more about you?
Yeah, you can check me out at heathermonahan.com or follow me on any social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, at Heather Monahan.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Mom Talk Radio, and really, really great advice. You know, I learned a lot of good lessons when I was in corporate America, and one of them is I remember a lot of times women, we would talk about how do you tell your employer that you're pregnant, and so often we forget about looking at the bottom line and talking the language of our CEO. So as you are making those decisions and having those conversations, don't forget you add a lot to the bottom line of your company and to the business that you work for. And don't forget, it's not only about I work 8 hours a day, but if you communicate in the language that men communicate in and the things that matter most to the business, your conversation really should shift from, you know what, I work 8 hours a day for you, or I work 10 hours, or I'm always here late. Instead, why don't you focus on, I add $1.2 million of sales to the bottom line. I brought in 6 new clients last year, and when I'm pregnant, I can do that whether I'm pregnant or I'm not, and reconfirm the commitment that you have for the company prior to going on maternity leave, if that is what your intention is. It's some really good conversations, and I encourage you to go to Heather's website to find out more resources. You know, we are in the middle of a really winter, weird winter where people are either really cold or really hot right now. I see a lot of posts where folks up north are saying it's 73 degrees and what do I do now? I even saw one mom posted that she was putting away her winter clothes and she lives in Chicago. Okay, March has not even gotten here yet and you've put away your winter clothes. We're going to be speaking with Mia McGee. Yes, she has six-year-olds. And we're going to find out how that all goes down and hear about her new show on UpTV.com.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Okay, I had 3 kids in less than 20 months, and I thought that was a challenge, but I think that I've met someone who has out-challenged me, and that is Mia McGee. You might know her as a mother of Sextuplets. She's the star of UpTV's Growing Up McGee, and I got to tell you, I saw previews of it the other night, and I was just like marking my calendar to watch the show. So I am really, really excited to have Mia with us today to tell us how she does that. So Mia, welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
So your kids are now 6 years old, and
yeah,
I bet that you are busier now than you probably were when they were like newborns.
You're right. You got that right. Trying to keep up and stay on top of everything. Because when they were babies, I can just place them in one spot and that's where they were. But now they're all over the place.
That's right.
Crazy.
And, you know, like I always say to new moms, you know, when they have the newborn, I'm like, oh, just wait till they hit like 6, 7, 8 years old and it gets far busier. So what are your biggest challenges? Is it the cooking? Is it the cleaning? Is it just managing day-to-day activities?
I would say the cleaning for me. The cleaning is the most challenging. Staying on top of 6 kids, I mean, that's a lot. The laundry, if you only can imagine, we have to at least do 2 loads a day to just maintain it. We never see an empty laundry room. It's always something. So
that's hilarious.
The hardest part.
Like when they told you you were having 6 babies, like what was your initial reaction, you and your husband?
Oh, goodness. We went in for normal ultrasound because, you know, we were, you know, happy to find out we were finally pregnant. And we wanted to hear the heartbeat for the first time in 8 weeks. And boy, my God, didn't we hear several heartbeats? I mean, it was just all over the place. It was the scariest. It was the... I mean, it was such a, words really can't even describe it. I was scared, completely shocked. I did not know that it was even possible, period.
Okay.
It was originally seven. And it was three girls and four boys. So we lost the seventh girl at 23 weeks. And we had the rest of them at 27 weeks. But they were really early.
Wow. Wow. So, yeah. Okay. So I want to kind of fast forward to now, because that's what we can watch on TV.
Right.
I'm just going to make an assumption with you said, you know, there's a lot going on. I'm sure what's not going on, or what you would presume is not going on, is too much romance between you and your husband. But you guys actually have found time to like concentrate on your marriage, which is just amazing.
Yes. You know what? It's all, you know, when you have multiples, it's bananas. It's crazy, but it's a plus to it. There is a plus, because they are the same age. They do keep each other occupied, you know, whereas the parents usually have to be a lot of, you know, involved to entertain.
Right.
They entertain each other. So, but we really run the house with an iron fist. Look, we have structure. It's bedtime. They try to fight against it, but we keep pushing back. We take an annual trip every year, a cruise in January after the holidays. The holidays is family time, but then after is mommy and daddy time.
Okay, so you just cracked me up. You go, I guess your normalcy is just beyond most of our normalcy, because like you just said, when you have multiples, okay, Mia, you have multiple multiples. Like I don't even know that you can compare yourself to like multiples, like moms of twins or triplets. Like you have multiple multiples, you know? So
that's right.
You kind of crack me up. So what are we going to see on Up TV, on your show? I know that it airs, what night does it air?
Thursday nights at 9:30. So tonight at 9:30, tonight at 9:30, but on Thursday nights at 9:30. You will see the good, the bad, the ugly. I mean, you will see everything. This is our first sets of kids, so we're learning, we're growing, and they're growing as well as parents. We've never done this before. We've been married right out of high school. And then we were married for 10 years when we had the kids. So we're growing. You'll see us, you know, just do lots of new adventures and try this. This may work. This doesn't work. I mean, it's a lot of stuff with the six kids.
You're scaring me. You're like, this is our first set of kids. That makes me sound, it makes it sound like there might be more in the future. I tell you what's in my future. And that is, I'm watching you on Thursdays at 9:30. I'm turning off Grey's Anatomy and I'm switching over to you, and it's 9:30 on Thursday night. So thank you so much for joining us on Mom Talk Radio. Good luck with all the kids, and we'll have to have you back for an update sometime in the future. And when we return, we're going to be speaking with the founder of Vex Life and Blissed In. It's a wellness movement that a mother of five designed just for you.
Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
Her name is Rebecca Baruki, but people call her Bex, which is so cool. So what does she do? She designs a wellness movement for mothers, and she calls it Bex Life and Blissed In. She is the mother of five. She's a TV host, a meditation guide, an author, speaker. She's doing a whole lot of stuff. And now her first book, You Have 4 Minutes to Change Your Life, was released just last month. So we want to welcome her to Mom Talk Radio. Welcome, Bex.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so having five kids and meditating, like I'm just trying to figure out how you do that.
Well, that's the, it's in the title of the book. It's You Have 4 Minutes. So my meditations are designed to be easy, to be short, and to be able to be practiced in the midst of chaos, which I certainly have a lot of with five kids in the house.
So just how do you do that? Is that like when you go and lock yourself in the bathroom, or how does that happen?
Sometimes. sometimes I usually have company in the bathroom. So it could be in my laundry room. Most often it's in my car. I like to treat my meditations as something to use as a tool to recenter myself in transition times. So if I'm taking the kids to practice or I'm running to the grocery store, before I head into the next event or the next activity, I just take a couple minutes in my car to reconnect to myself, to breathe deeply, pay attention to my breath, sometimes say a couple affirmations, but it's really a tool to allow me to manage my day rather than something I go to escape my day.
That's a really interesting perspective. Do you encourage your kids to meditate?
I do, but it looks a little bit different. I treat it more as a mindfulness activity, as something to encourage them to take a pause. So more often than not, it's happening during a brewing argument. So I'll see the teenagers, you know, trying to clean up after dinner, and I can see a fight about to start about who's going to do what and who isn't doing what. And I'll interrupt with, all right, guys, let's just think about what's happening here. Let's take 10 seconds to be silent. Let's think about the next thing we're going to say and ask yourself if the next thing you're planning on saying is going to help or hurt the situation. And just that 10 seconds to take a breath and pause usually diffuses the situation. And that's a way to meditate. Meditation is simply a way to contemplate or to be mindful about a single thought, word, idea, or feeling.
Okay, so mindfulness reminds me of another kind of mom's challenge, and that is, you know, unmindful eating, where we're, you know, often eating after our children's plate, which lends itself to gaining weight. So could we apply meditation and actually lose weight?
100%. I'm using it now. I'm on a juice cleanse as we speak, and I've been wanting to sabotage it often because I get hungry and I get tired. And what I use a 5-second meditation for this that I offer in the book as well. And it's the simple question to ask myself, how does this serve me? Or how does this serve me in this moment? So before I take a bite, before I make an eating decision, especially when I'm in the grocery store and I'm tempted to buy a lot of things that aren't on the list, I just ask myself, how does this serve me? How does this serve my goals? And sometimes a piece of cake serves me very well and it makes me feel really good. And oftentimes, though, it's like it's not really serving me at all. And I won't feel good afterwards. So I choose the better thing.
So if I've never meditated, which I'm not sure I have, how do I get started?
Well, first you have to reframe your idea about what meditation is. And I think that people most often avoid meditation because they think it's something that only spiritual people do, or something that takes a lot of time to do, or you have to go up to a mountain and escape your life. Meditation, again, is just a way to connect with yourself and to focus on one thought or one feeling. So I would encourage you, if you've never meditated before, to find a place that's relatively quiet. It doesn't have to be silent, that you might go undisturbed for just a couple minutes, and start by paying attention to your breath, your easy inhales and exhales as they are in the moment. Don't try to change it. Just focus on how it feels when the inhale enters your body and how the exhale exits your body. And maybe try to count your breath. Maybe say a simple affirmation, like when you inhale, say peace, and as you exhale, say release. Anything that brings your attention to a single thought instead of allowing it to scatter all over the place on a million thoughts.
And what if we want to turn to a book? I know that your book is really good, but are there other favorite books that you have?
My favorite book of all time, it's a little bit weird, it's a little bit out there, it's Be Here Now by Ram Dass. And that's what started me on meditation, and that's what got me to start thinking about the conversations that I was having in my head a little bit more mindfully, because I think it's those conversations that get us in trouble and lead us astray from our goals and, you know, where we want to be. But I love Jack Kornfield. I love Deepak Chopra. I think he's great and super mainstream. Gabby Bernstein, she has a bunch of books that are stellar for that speak in a very simple language, a very easy language for people to understand and relate to.
And what about time of day? Does it really matter what time of day? I know a lot of people start first thing in the morning.
I meditate several times throughout the day because, again, it's just a reset. It's a way to put chapter breaks in my day. But the morning intention that I set is very important to me. So I wake up and I spend just a few minutes, again, maybe four, where I start with gratitude. And I say thank you three times out loud, usually just with a whisper. And then I take stock of the things that I'm grateful for. So I name three things. And sometimes it's as easy as warm bed, nice house, you know, healthy children. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I do is I ask myself, I set my intention by asking myself, how may I serve. So that could be, you know, being nice to every single stranger I meet by giving them a smile, or, you know, telling my children how much I love and appreciate them. So I ask myself, how may I serve? And that intention sets me up in a positive way for the day. And it also keeps me on track throughout the day when I revisit that intention. Like, am I acting in service to my intention for, you know, the day?
Well, that's just a great way of thinking. And I want to thank you so much for sharing some of that perspective with us. I want to remind our listeners that you can find Rebecca at bexlife.com. And you can find her books there as well. That's BEXLIFE.com. We have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for being with us today. And when we return, we have one of the world's most respected historians of children's books and the person who created it.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
You know, children's books, I'm sure if you think about it, there are some beloved titles that you remember from your childhood, or perhaps ones that you are reading with your children now. I am delighted to have with us Leonard Marcus. He's one of the world's most respected historians of children's books and the people who created them. His award-winning books include Margaret Wise Brown, Awakened by the Moon, and Dr. Genius, The Letters of Ursula Nordstrom. He's a frequent contributor to the New York Times Book Reviews and others. And I'm just excited to have him here with us today on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Leonard, to Mom Talk.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, thank you. So the first image when I think of children's books that come to mind are the little golden books. And I'm just wondering what made them so special to some of us.
Well, one thing was that they were so widely available. So they ended up in homes all over America and eventually all around the world. They started in 1940, and in those days, on into the 70s, there really weren't that many bookstores in America unless you lived in a major city. So they were the books that were handy. Plus, they were very affordable. A golden book cost 25 cents back in the beginning, and most picture books cost about $2. So they transformed the equation for millions of American parents and made it possible for children to have home libraries for the first time. Then there was the fact that they hired wonderful illustrators and writers and spent a lot of time thinking about what the stories were that children would most want to read and hear about.
For Christmas, one of my children gave me a book that was called The Greatest Lessons I Learned. I learned from little golden books. And I have to tell you, I have gone back and read that like four or five times, because not only is it true that we learned as children such good little lessons from those books, but the memories that they conjure up for all of us. It's I know it's something that I wish I had saved all of mine.
There are a lot of people who collect them these days for that very reason.
So why was it the 40s and the 50s? Why are those stories just and those storytellers make such an impact? Whereas today it doesn't seem as frequent. Is it just the number, the sheer volume of books and stories that are being produced?
Well, I mean, I think there are, memorable books being published today, but the 40s and 50s, children's book publishing was a cottage industry. Today, it's a huge moneymaker for publishers. So I think more attention was paid on each individual book back in the 40s and 50s. And there was also there wasn't anything like the glamour attached to children's books that has been the case since Harry Potter, you know, made zillions of dollars for its author. So the focus was on what are people going to want to read. At home to their children. Children's books, and Golden Books epitomized this idea, had sort of an intimate, very homey feeling to them. I think that's a big part of what they communicate.
And so the pokey little puppy is actually the best-selling children's picture book of all time. What made that so special?
The artist who did the pictures was a man named Gustav Tengren. He was a Swedish immigrant to America. Before he started doing books, he did work for Walt Disney in the 1930s, just as Disney was starting in on making the first animated feature films in history. And the Seven Dwarfs in Disney's first major film, Snow White, were created by this man, Gustav Tengren. Then a few years later, he moved to New York. He wanted to be on his own as an artist instead of working in a studio. And when he had the chance to illustrate the Pokey Little Puppy, I like to think that the puppy and his brothers and sister puppies are, in a way, reincarnations of those Seven Dwarfs in dog form, because they have the same personality and vibrancy that the dwarfs did. So part of the appeal is that vividness of the character, of the pictures of the characters. And the other part is that it tells a really classic children's story about a young child's curiosity and wanting to just, you know, pause and take in a little bit more of the world rather than just following in line as he's been instructed by his elders.
You know, I never really put the Seven Dwarfs together with the similar artwork that's in the Pokey Little Puppy. But now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Well, of course you're right, because you're the expert on the subject.
it was the same artist, as it turns out. You know, nobody knew that. I mean, it was never written that that was the case. But but that's the way his career developed, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So if we wanted to, you said people collect the little golden books now. If we wanted to go out and find them now, can you find them in just about every bookstore?
I think so. And also yard sales and looking in people's attics are also good ways to find the older ones. You know, and I mean, they're conventions. They're very organized ways of, you know, swap meets, things like that. They publish the books in editions of sometimes 100,000 or more, and then they reprinted them over and over again. So there's no shortage.
It's a very interesting topic. I never really put so much thought behind children's book, but I certainly appreciate your expertise, Leonard Marcus. Thank you so much for joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. And when we return, we're going to turn our attention to a very important thing, particularly as the snow is melting up north this very early spring. We're going to turn toward pool safety and what you need to know to keep your children safe.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
As a mother in Florida, I know how important pool safety is. It's actually the number one accidental killer of children in our state, and right behind car accidents, if not tied with car accidents, unfortunately. But our next expert and guest has a lot of experience and a lot of know-how on how to keep our children safe around water. And now, as snow and pools are defrosting a lot earlier this year, it's really important not to be caught off guard without a pool fence or other safety mechanisms. So we're delighted to have Eric Lupton. He is the president of Lifesaver Pool Fence. a family-owned and operated company that manufactures products in the USA. They are the nation's largest pool fence company in the world and the only one recognized by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. And he is also the vice president of the National Drowning Prevention Alliance. So I'm excited to have him here. Welcome, Eric, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you very much. That was quite the introduction.
Oh, well, I'm glad to have you because, you know, I really believe that, you know, it's 73 degrees in Chicago and, you know, we're thinking snow, but there could be dangers in the water that's accumulating and melting there, you know, as the summer and the spring come a little earlier.
Yeah, you know, we normally think of drowning and drowning prevention as a summertime issue. But with cooler weather or warmer weather, depending upon where you are in the country, you know, we tend to open up the back doors and windows, you know, to let in that nice cool weather or nice warm weather, depending upon where you are. And, you know, that leaves a perfect opportunity for children who either can crawl or you didn't know could crawl to make their way out into the backyard and into the pool.
Yeah, or even those kids that can walk. So how do we keep our kids safe?
No, the most important thing is to focus on layers of protection, right? There's no way to make any child 100% drown-proof, but with enough layers of protection, you can get as close to a fail-safe system as possible. So those layers that we typically recommend, the first one is always going to be parent supervision. Parent supervision is always the most important thing you can do to prevent your child from drowning. The second one is going to be high locks on all the doors and windows that lead to the pool, and also alarming those doors and windows that lead to the pool. Sometimes you can do that with a home security system. There's products out there on the market that you can attach to doors and windows that will make them alarm if they open up. You know, you want to make sure that all the entryways to the pool are covered. The third thing is going to be a barrier, some kind of fence between the home and the pool. Obviously, that's the product we make. We make a lifesaver pool fence, which goes around the pool. It's mesh. It's transparent. It's impossible to climb. It's removable in the event that you have a party or you're entertaining. And they usually feature a self-closing, self-latching gate. So you can't leave it open accidentally. You know, it'll always remain closed. So the pool fence is going to be the biggest way you keep children from entering the pool. Once in the pool fence, you have alarms that go in the pool to go off if, you know, a child actually makes it inside somehow. And the final layer is CPR. Knowing CPR and being familiar with CPR in the event that all your other layers fail is going to be your last layer of protection.
Yeah, I like the fact that, and I'm going to be honest here, I didn't realize it until just now, but I actually had one of your fences because I was paranoid when I had children because I actually had a nephew that drowned in a pool. And what I love about your fences is that, I mean, how sad is it that a lot of us will make a decision like, oh, we don't want that ugly thing up, right? When it's the only thing that's going to keep one of the things that's going to keep our kids safe, but yours actually come out of the ground. So if you have a party or you want to put it away, you can do that. So love that. We just have a minute left. Can you tell us where we can go to find out more about pool fences and safety tips and such?
Yeah. The best place to go is www.poolfence.com. That's our website. Mm-hmm. And we have tons of information there on pool safety, on all the different layers of protection, and of course, on pool fencing itself.
Well, thank you, Eric, so much for joining us. Remember, you guys, it's just not worth it. Get the pool fence, put it up, and save your baby and your child's life. Because, listen, your kids might not know how to swim, but the kid coming into your yard might not, or the next guest you have. I'm Maria Bailey with Mom Talk Radio. Thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see you again next week.